Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're heading to the UBS Investment Bank European Conference, which took place here in London. With a host of brilliant speakers and panellists from within and without the bank, it was a perfect opportunity to unpack some of the more complex questions dominating the thoughts of everyone from investors to advisors to strategists to policymakers. One theme in particular that we'll be focusing on in this week's programme is the subject of one of the panels in London: arresting the next recession. What more can monetary and fiscal policy offer? We'll hear from some of our usual experts and from some of those in attendance. We'll also consider the impact that seismic political events, namely the effect on proceedings of President-elect Trump, can have on existing thinking, strategy and policy direction in this space. We start with Leftris Famakis, global macro strategist at UBS Investment Bank, who was at the event this week. He identified several key trends that emerged from the programme across the days of the conference. One was speculation about the expected post-Trump fiscal boost out of the US, the other the spectre of increased political risk around the world, but especially in Europe. Before we get into that, however, we asked Leftris to first expand on the importance of the conference and this type of forum generally. He stresses that having and sharing informed opinions has never been more important.
Well, it's important to promote public debate, and it's important to give an example of public debate at a high level. Anyone can have opinions. If you can have informed opinions, that's even better. And by setting the standards high, you're also incentivizing a level of future engagement and research of things at a similar level. So it's for me, it's essential. It's not only an opportunity to see how to get in contact with sort of cutting-edge opinions and research on certain issues, but it's quite inspirational in terms of what you can do and how you should be thinking about these things. So there's no question about it. The fact that policymakers get the opportunity to discuss live with investors and participants all in one forum, frequently face-to-face, it's definitely a great thing. So, I mean, there is no question that of the usefulness of that approach. And in fact, the other thing that usually comes out of this whole process is that you get a good feel as to what really people are focused on, what their primary worries are. So there is also a bit of reciprocity there. It's also good for policymakers to be in frequent touch with the investor community, because usually, you know, markets are ahead of politics anyway. So it's important for politicians not only to look backward but also to look forward, and being in touch with the markets and giving the opportunity for that interaction should inform, in theory at least, policy making and make it a bit more forward looking. Usually it tends to be backward looking.
What else was on the agenda, or more accurately, what else did the attendees at the conference want to discuss? Were there themes that seemed to permeate every session? Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist, UBS Wealth Management, explains that the spectre of President-elect Trump was perhaps predictably on the minds of many. And there were plenty of technical questions too about the US president's power.
I think, yes, the US election result was certainly something a lot of investors wanted to discuss. There does remain, of course, a great deal of uncertainty about the economics of what President-elect Trump is going to do. What are we going to take from candidate Trump and actually implement in terms of policy in the new administration? So there was a lot of speculation about that. There were also a lot of technical questions about what can an American president actually do without Congress, what can he do with Congress, and so on and so forth. Because, of course, Trump has come up with quite a lot of radical suggestions, and there is a questioning about whether these are within the limits of his executive authority.
Let's turn next to that specific session of the European Conference on which we're focusing today, namely, arresting the next recession. What more can monetary and fiscal policy offer? We asked Bloomberg's Ewan Potts, what tools are there left in the locker? There are certainly plenty of monetary challenges around, as he explains.
It's certainly true that the world's central banks have really stepped up and done a great deal. In fact, they've done more than they've ever done in history. We have negative interest rates across the Eurozone and in Japan and several other countries. We have massive bond buying programs. A lot of the world's central banks have been engaged in buying up assets in an attempt to stimulate their economies. Just before I come into the studio, I looked at the Bank of Japan. Their total assets are now 465 million yen. Now, converted into dollars, that's $4.2 trillion of assets held by the Bank of Japan, and they don't just buy bonds, they've been buying equities, or at least equity derivatives, in another attempt to stimulate the Japanese economy. So many central banks have done a great deal. Now, a lot of people say it's time to turn to the world's governments, but the problem for many of the world's governments is they don't have a lot of firepower. Now, this isn't the case everywhere. Germany has a budget surplus, and the UK, although it has a deficit, the Conservative government there is saying it will spend a little bit more, perhaps, to mitigate some of the effects of Brexit. But yeah, it's certainly true that central bankers would like governments to step in and do more.
On this broad question of what more monetary and fiscal policy can offer, there are two key points to bear in mind, according to Paul Donovan.
Well, I think there are two issues that we need to consider here. The first is that if we see an economic slowdown in the future, is it going to be like economic slowdowns in the past? I think the answer to that is probably no. Global economies have become more efficient over time, particularly around things like inventory management. And typically, inventory is one of the biggest causes of economic downturns. If we become more efficient in the future, then perhaps, you know, the volatility of the economic cycle is lessened. You know, we may get more ups and downs, but the ups and downs are of smaller scope. So that's, I think, an important consideration. And in that context, I think that there is still room on central bank policy broadly defined, so that's monetary, quantitative, and regulatory policy, and on fiscal policy. There is also clearly room to provide a degree of support. Whether that support is applied in a wise fashion is a wholly different set of questions. But yes, I think in the event of there being a slowdown, and in particular if it's a fairly moderate slowdown, I think policymakers in both the central banking and fiscal spheres have the room to take action.
Bob Swarup is an author, investment advisor and fund manager, and a regular voice on this programme. What tools are left, in Bob's view?
As far as policy itself, because monetary policy, the real problem is monetary policy is always meant to be a stopgap. The idea that you can simply chuck money at a problem and hope it goes away has always been laughable. The entire point was buying time so that politicians and others could execute some structural reforms. And I think the real problem is politicians became extremely lazy. You know, the monetary lever was so easy to pull. All you ever did was ask your central bank to throw a bit more QE into the bonfire, and hey, presto, growth was there again. So I think this is the problem. Because there was no structural reform, people have now sort of gotten fed up. Now the blame game is turning towards central bankers. So hence, you know, Trump, of course, going about Yellen, Theresa May making pointed remarks about Carney, but many others. The problem is that even if they go down the route of what you may now call fiscal easing, i.e. let's go and build lots of bridges and things like that, let's not forget, much as Japan started off with throwing money at a problem, what the Japanese also did was very famously build bridges to nowhere. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter whether Trump builds a wall down the whole length of the Mexican border or that Theresa May decides to make HS 3, 4, and 5 from London all the way to Inverness or somewhere. Unless you actually fundamentally in the economy have some structural reforms, all of that's still going to end up as, you know, pissing money down a black hole.
Mark Haefeli, UBS Global Chief Investment Officer, explained what more he thinks monetary and fiscal policy can offer, with a particular emphasis on the United States.
Well, I think that there is still room for monetary policy. I think that will continue, and that fiscal stimulus can be added to that mix in economies, certainly the United States. I think there's certainly scope for that in Europe as well. What is, I think, very interesting for us is that, you know, the U.S. is in a little bit of a different dynamic because they're perhaps in a position now to begin hiking rates. Since the U.S. economy is performing better, we believe that we will see earnings growth by the time we get to the end of 2016 versus the earnings that we saw in 2015. The employment is there, and so maybe there is some scope for the U.S. to begin to hike rates. Now, if you start to add a fiscal story to this, the dynamic for the United States may look a little bit different than Europe, where we're seeing increasing talk of tapering of the monetary stimulus, but not the same level of robust economic growth or inflation that will allow Europe to follow the U.S. path. And of course, we haven't had the same sense that there will be the fiscal stimulus there either.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the impact of recent seismic political shifts in the U.S., as Mark Hoefley was talking about there, to assess how much events of that magnitude may force a rethink of some of the themes we've been hearing about. A volatile and unpredictable US presidential election has given way to, well, an almost similarly volatile and, if anything, still more unpredictable period of transition. Given that, as we've heard, this topic cropped up throughout the discussions at the conference. It seems prudent to ask, how does the curveball of Trump's presidency change the focus or divert attention away from the fundamentals? We put that question to Mark Hoefley.
You know, there's curveballs all the time. I think what's become very interesting is the three-dimensional nature of this chess game. So one of the things we saw when the equity markets were selling off, when in the initial hours, as people were coming to the realization that Mr. Trump would be president, we also saw that the belief that the Fed would hike rates fell as well. So people already start calculating in how if one side of the equation turns more negative, the other side may turn more positive. So that they kind of assume some checks and balances. That has worked in the past, and we think it can continue for the foreseeable future. But increasingly, the focus will be more and more on how these levers of monetary stimulus and fiscal stimulus need to change given the limits of monetary policy. Maybe we're not at the limit, but certainly the marginal return of that policy has decreased.
With Trump's success, such a seismic shock, does it force a reevaluation of the monetary and fiscal policy assumptions made previously? What does it tell you more broadly? Bob Swarup, again.
Well, I think what it probably tells you is that whatever you're doing hasn't been working. Because if you look at Trump, I mean, actually, you know, Trump is, I think I said to you before, deglobalization probably actually began 4 or 5 years ago. And Trump is just the latest, you know, sign of it. I mean, in fact, if you go back to, let's say, Spain or Italy or Syriza, that was the exact same with, unquote, seismic shock, because in all of those cases, people got fed up of monetary and fiscal policy as was being done at the time and voted for somebody else and who basically promised them the world. In that sense, it forces you to realize, and I think they've seen some of this already, people are realizing that perhaps a lot of what's going on hasn't been working as well as they thought it was.
Looking to the US specifically, in the United States post-Trump, will we see earnings growth, maybe even wind up in a position to hike rates? Was there a consensus on this point at the conference? In short, no, says Leftris Famakis.
There is no consensus because we haven't really seen much. What we've seen is a market move which is expecting that, or at least the rationale behind the market move is that some sort of reflation is going to take place. This reflation is predicated on the fact that policies are going to be enacted which will help boost equilibrium rates higher, therefore policy rates can go higher, and as a result of that process, we'll be able to hit the Fed's targets of full employment and stable inflation at 2% at a higher level of interest rate. So that's a presumption. It hasn't been tested. It remains to be seen. It's a spontaneous reaction to a new situation and a new environment. As I said, the fact that the new administration is promising fiscal stimulus at this stage, because of the fact that the bar is very low, will probably have some sort of beneficial impact in the short term. Now, the new administration has, of course, mentioned many other things which in the longer term are detrimental to economic growth. Protectionism is one. General willingness to follow an example of industrial policy akin to the past is another. So all these things, clearly, the stance on immigration is another. So all these things, there is an interplay between short-term factors and long-term factors. And before you see any details on any particular policy action, it's very difficult to come up with a verdict. I think that what there was a fair amount of agreement on was that in the short term, you will see some positive effects out of the fiscal boost, with the longer term results being a bit more uncertain.
Before the end of the programme, let's return to Bob Suara. He was talking earlier about the need for structural reform to address some of the fundamental problems that have A, seen a political shift towards anti-establishment populists, and B, prompted others to question the scope of monetary and fiscal policy. So, what prospects of said reforms? Is there now an appetite to tackle this as we have an apparent change agenda in the political realm? Or can that actually serve to make it more distant than ever? Bob Suara picks up the theme.
Well, I think it probably in the initial sort of phases makes it more distant than ever, because if you look at whether it's Theresa May or Nicolas Sarkozy or Donald Trump, they're all jumping on a bandwagon where they see the mood has shifted, they don't want to be left behind, they want to be in power, and they've really, you know, taken full advantage of that. The problem is you've made so many promises to so many different cohorts that realistically you can never fulfill them all. If you were to sit there and make structural reforms, that means making hard decisions. What does that mean? Well, it means simple things like, you know, for example, let's look at this way. Why did a whole swathe of the British public that was usually a core Labour heartland vote for Brexit? Why is it that a whole bunch of the US, and certainly geographically the vast majority of the US, if not in numbers, why did they all vote for Donald Trump? It's because they didn't have any other choices. In the absence of choices, people make the worst ones they can. I mean, you know, there has been no real thought given to the disruption that the last few decades of globalization has caused to a lot of people's livelihoods, the internet, technology. You know, and the problem is that if you want structural reform unfortunately is slower. So yes, you will do some easing to, you know, kind of cushion the blow, but it means doing things like investing in education and reform. It means thinking very, very hard about, you know, whether capital is going down a whole bunch of rabbit holes where it's not going to be productively being used across an economy. It's thinking a lot more about international coordination to actually push through reforms that get money flowing again.
Lastly, we end, as we began, with leftist Famakis. He sums up the conference by noting a thread that ran through virtually all discussions in the programme. That need for something more than monetary policy was the common thread.
Generally speaking, the focus was, quite surprisingly actually, more on the possibility for the good outcome rather than the bad outcome. But in that context, I think that the need for something more than monetary policy was pretty clear and a common thread in the discussion.
And that's Leftris Famakis, bringing us to the end of this 111th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes, SoundCloud or your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.